Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
America faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things podcast, where we count down the most insane things that happened this week. They have to be things that are unprecedented in our times or ever. And the most insane thing every week is that I can do this every week. It's the way we wrap up the week. Okay, let's get started. Insane thing number 7. In a bid to keep Democrats from killing people over the Doge efforts, Democrats hepped up on their leadership in the mainstream media's lies. Doge came out of the woodwork, exposing itself on national TV. You know what this is like? This is like the boogeyman. No, it is. When you think the boogeyman's hiding under your bed and you don't know what he looks like, he's really scary. These guys are not scary. They're really important people, like a rocket scientist who leads the Doge group and the founder of Airbnb. They're not there to steal your Social Security. By the way, things have gotten so insane this week that Elon Musk announced a libel lawsuit against former Democrat representative and MSNBC commentator Jamal Bowman for claiming that he is both a Nazi and a thief who is stealing from you. Folks, it's incredible watching their media. They repeat this thing over and over and over again. He's a thief, stealing, thief. They're stealing, oligarch, stealing, stealing, stealing. But they never say how much Elon Musk and Doge are stealing from you or who specifically they stole from. Was it a grandma? She not getting her check? They don't say. You would think that Democrats would notice this after a while. I mean, I would if Fox told me Trump was stealing from me, but never gave me a dollar figure, an address, a person's name. I'd think that was weird, but the Democrats don't. They're blowing things up. And that is insane thing number 7. The fact that we caught the guy who firebombed that Vegas dealership. And who was he? Exactly who you'd expect.
But a preliminary assessment of the suspect's social media activity indicates some very loose but self-proclaimed ties to the Communist Party USA social media group, as well as social media groups called Revolutionary Communist International, Hidden Palestine, Palestine Action, and a variety of other social media groups.
So he's the guy who firebombed the Tesla dealership. Folks, this is the same week another Tesla dealership was found to be wired with live bombs in Texas. So you'd think that this would be the time the Democrat Party leadership would say, you know, hey, what? We love good old fashioned America protests, but we can't be shooting bullets into Tesla dealerships like the Las Vegas guy did. You'd think that the Democrat Party leadership would take this opportunity to condemn the violence. But you'd be wrong. Here's a Fox News reporter following Nancy Pelosi and Hakeem Jeffries, the current Democrat minority leader in the House, around the Capitol saying, hey, you want to condemn? She's met with nothing but silence.
Nearly all Democratic lawmakers are refusing to condemn the violence, the vandalism against Tesla cars. People have nothing to do with Elon Musk, but the dealerships, the charging stations. There have been dozens of attacks in recent weeks all across the country. Now, some even include the use of gunshots and Molotov cocktails. Leftists are using violence to express their outrage over Tesla CEO Elon Musk's role in the Trump administration. But here's reaction from Democratic lawmakers when they were asked directly about these attacks.
Can you tell us what you think about what's happening with the Tesla products, the violence at the dealerships? What's your take on the situation?
I'm a little bit late here right now.
What's your take on it? Do you denounce the violence?
That second one is Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. He just keeps walking with a stone cold face because they love the violence. Which brings us to insane thing number 6, Doge leaders basically begging the public to understand if we don't find at least $1 trillion worth of cuts, we're going to end up in the debt death cycle. Everyone from hedge fund billionaire Ray Dalio, to Scott Bessent, who is our Treasury Secretary, to even Elon Musk, warned this week that if we don't straighten this out, America is going bankrupt. It's going to be awful, in a bid to persuade them from stopping the violence. Here's the leader of Doge, a rocket scientist, doing just that in an interview with Brett Baer. And what's amazing here is that they're saying, look, we're pretty sure we can cut $1 trillion and you won't even notice because it's almost all fraud and waste. You'd think people would be praising them, throwing them ticker tape parades, but Democrats are trying to kill them. They get death threats every day.
If we don't do this, we're sunk. Unless this exercise is successful, the ship of America will sink. That's why we're doing it.
Some people say this shouldn't take a rocket scientist. Steve Davis, you are a rocket scientist.
Used to be.
Yeah, I do. And now essentially you're the chief operating officer of Doge. Day-to-day operations. Fair to say?
Part of the Doge team.
So how did you end up here? What's the biggest challenge you see?
The reason I'm here, which is probably for many, is that I think the goal is incredibly inspiring. I think most of the taxpayers in the country would agree that in order to have the country going bankrupt would be a very bad thing, and therefore the country going not bankrupt is a good thing, that all of us are willing to kind of put our lives on hold in order to do. I think the thing that's special right now is we actually believe there's a chance to succeed, that there's an administration that's supportive and a great cabinet and just a great group that will actually make success a possible outcome. And I think that's, given the inspiring mission and given the non-zero chance of success, it was worth doing.
Worth doing, even though they tell Baer they've all received credible death threats. Look, this is unbelievable. Death threats for digging up stuff like, well, this.
For you, what's the most astonishing thing you've found out in this process?
The sheer amount of waste and fraud in the government. It is astonishing. It's mind-blowing. We routinely encounter wastes of $1 billion or more, casually. You know, for example, like the simple survey that was literally a 10-question survey that you could do with SurveyMonkey, cost you about $10,000, the government was being charged almost $1 billion for that.
For just the survey?
$1 billion for a simple online survey, do you like the national park? And then there appeared to be no feedback loop for what would be done with that survey. So the survey would just go into nothing.
Let me translate. What happened there is some Democrat donors NGO, some Democrat activist NGO, some Democrat family members NGO spent $10,000 for that survey and pocketed the other $990 million. It's probably still knocking around in Democrat pockets, Democrat mansions, Democrat bank accounts, and probably Democrat campaign accounts, after being thoroughly laundered first, of course. Musk is convinced that's why so many of these judges are trying to stop this effort in its tracks. Liberal Democrat judges, that is.
Are you surprised at some of the judges that have weighed in? There's about 8 or 10 now of these cases that are at least temporary holds. They're being challenged by the DOJ.
Right.
Are you surprised by that pushback?
The D.C. Circuit is notorious for having a very far-left bias. And when you look at the people close to some of these judges, where are they working? Oh, they're working at these NGOs. Oh, they're the ones getting this money. Does that seem like a system that lacks corruption? It sounds like corruption to me.
Musk may not be wrong. Under this rock, it appears, they're beginning to find an entire parasitic class of people feeding off the American people. Take, for instance, the judge who decided that Pete Hegseth, head of the military, couldn't exclude transgender members. Turns out her significant other, also a woman, makes $300,000 a year for her federally funded NGO. It does something about promoting women in journalism or something. What about creepy Judge Boasberg himself, the guy who made Trump, well, tried to make Trump turn around those planes full of Tren de Aragua members? Get a load of this guy. He lives in a $2.5 million D.C. mansion despite making only $225,000 a year. How's that possible? Well, his wife's pro-abortion NGO And if you go on my Twitter feed, you can see his wife hobnobbing with all of the right people, including Kamala Harris's husband. Yeah, her pro-abortion NGO takes in $300,000 a year. Then there's Judge Boasberg's sister and brother-in-law. They run an NGO that takes in money to distribute to other NGOs. Then there's his daughter, who works at another separate NGO, promoting, no shock here, illegal immigration. That NGO actually provides legal services to keep Trende Aragua members in the country. So it's all one big racket. Oh, and as Elon Musk explained to Joe Rogan, there's an illegal immigration connection to the racket.
So what she was alleging was that she was in charge of turning illegal immigrants into clients. That's what they would call them. And that she would go to them and try to ask them, do you have a headache? Do you have back problems?
Yes.
If you do, now you can be permanently disabled. You get permanent disability, so you get Social Security for life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not just Social Security, but disability, which is even more.
Right, and you get them on the taxpayer dole right away, and they're illegal aliens.
Yes. Entitlements fraud, that includes like Social Security, disability, Medicaid. Entitlements fraud for illegal aliens is what is serving as a gigantic magnetic force to pull people in from all around the world and keep them here. Like basically, if you pay people at a standard of living that is above 90% of Earth, then you have a very powerful incentive for 90% of Earth to come here and to stay here. But if you end the illegal alien fraud, then you turn off that magnet and they leave. And they stop coming, and the ones that are here, many of them will simply leave. And if that happens, they will lose a massive number of Democratic voters.
And how is that possible? The Doge team explained. Broken government systems that don't talk to each other. With 1980s technology, if you're lucky.
The two systems are not talking to each other.
Yes.
Right. And so you don't know at the Small Business Administration that you're giving a loan to a 9-month-old, which happened in one case, because you're not cross-referencing that with the Social Security Administration data that has birth dates. If you just solve that simple problem, you would solve a huge amount of fraud.
Because the databases don't talk to each other, all they got was from Social Security is like, is this person alive? Yes, they're not alive. It's falsely marked. Person is falsely marked as alive in Social Security, but they didn't. But that person, a fraudster, can now get unemployment and disability from a dead person.
The scale and the scope of the fraud is staggeringly massive, folks. And don't let this depress you, because this had to happen. This is the part where you lance the boil, okay? You're like, wow, that's a big boil. It's going to be nasty when we lance it. It'll look terrible. But the lancing is exactly what needs to happen so it can heal.
At Social Security, one of the first things we learned is that they get phone calls every day of people trying to change direct deposit information. So when you want to change your bank account, you can call Social Security. We learned 40% of the phone calls that they get are from fraudsters.
40%?
That's right. Almost half.
They steal people's Social Security is what happens. Is they call in, they say they claim to be a retiree, then they convince the Social Security person on the phone to change where the money's flowing. It actually goes to some fraudster. This is happening all day, every day, and then somebody doesn't receive their Social Security. It's because of all the fraud loopholes in the Social Security system.
Ask yourself why Democrats want to kill Elon Musk for revealing this. Remember, he's the guy who gets at least one credible death threat every day. And why their leadership is completely silent, will do nothing to stop them. And you know what I know in my gut. They're at the bottom of all this somehow. Which leads us to insane thing number 5. Good news and an update to last week when Speaker of the House, Republican Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, was still pretending that he couldn't do a thing about any of these corrupt judges. Folks, Federalist Paper number 80 makes it absolutely clear that the founders, it was written by Alexander Hamilton, did not intend district court judges to have nationwide injunction power. They only have the power in their districts. There are 94 of those. In the early days of the Republic, when members of Congress got annoyed with judges, they simply dissolved their judicial district or dissolved their judgeship. They didn't even bother with impeaching them. Anyway, to update last week's Insane Things podcast, Mike Johnson was giving interviews, as were a lot of the Republicans pretending, and they were pretending, to be victims of these judges when they likely knew damn well, as I did, that with a 51 vote, and there's plenty of vehicles that would let us do it with just 51 votes, they could do all kinds of things. And these judges' nationwide injunction ability and the court cases with them cancel their judicial districts, even forbid judges from hearing immigration cases when Donald Trump decides to deport en masse Trende Aragua. The reason they can do this is because the appeals courts, the circuit courts, the district courts, those federal courts, none of them are in the Constitution. Only the Supreme Court is. Congress actually created those courts, and they can have them operate in any way they would like. So anyway, last week, Elon Musk and Donald Trump, or both of them, or one of them, sicked Ron DeSantis on skeezy, sleazy Mike Johnson. And if you remember, and I thought this hit was really interesting, Elon Musk initially endorsed and supported Ron DeSantis over Donald Trump. They're really tight. In fact, DeSantis did his presidential campaign announcement with Elon Musk. So I thought it was interesting that Ron DeSantis was clearly chosen for the hit on Republican leadership. And within about 24 hours, he did three brutal interviews explaining to the public, they got cut up and went all over X, that Republican leaders absolutely could stop these lawsuits easily. In fact, DeSantis said he was shocked they hadn't done it, given that they've been in office this term since the beginning of January.
We're talking about the courts. You know the courts as good as anyone.
Limit the jurisdiction.
Congress can limit the jurisdiction of the courts. That is plain in the Constitution. It doesn't require 67 votes in the Senate. You can attach it to a CR. You can attach it to a must-pass bill. And here's the thing. If somehow you tried to do that and maybe it just didn't work, then I think our voters would at least understand. They're not even trying any of this stuff.
It's infuriating.
We knew these leftist judges were going to do what they're doing. Everybody predicted that. President Trump knew that. This was one where the Congress is basically, and what are they? They're on 2 weeks of vacation now. Really? That must be nice.
Yeah.
I think they got a lot of work to do.
The CR and the must-pass bill, DeSantis is a former Congress member. He knows if they attach it, that's 51 votes right there. In other words, they don't need the two-thirds in the Senate. Well, after getting slapped hard, and this is the insane thing this week, Mike Johnson suddenly remembered he's not actually a victim of these liberal judges at all. In fact, he's going to hold hearings and even entertain legislation on this. Let's hope this guy moves his rear end quickly. Anyway, suddenly Speaker Johnson was everywhere giving response interviews, vowing to do something.
Something is happening right now that has not happened before. In the last 100 years, listen to this, 67% of the injunctions issued against a president were issued against one president alone, and that's Donald J. Trump. 67% of the injunctions over the last 100 years. Okay, that's a problem. 92% of those were issued by judges who were known or accused of being partisan, you know, Democrat appointees to the court. So that something that unusual is happening, something that is out of the norm. It is a dangerous trend, and it violates equal justice under law, that critical principle. It violates our system itself. It violates separation of powers when a judge thinks that they can enjoin something that a president is doing that the American people voted for. That is not what the founders intended. So there's a natural tension between the branches of the government, and we're working through that. The Judiciary Committee is looking at alternatives. One of the bills that I really like that's already been through committee was authored by Representative Daryl Issa, and that would limit the scope of federal injunctions, the ability of one individual judge to abuse the system in this way. And it would be, in my view, a dramatic improvement.
And that right there, folks, is a testament to the vast and still not fully tested power of X, because the DeSantis interview got chopped up, made the rounds, trended down the side. Before you knew it, Mike Johnson was scrambling to do something about a problem he's intentionally ignored since January. In other words, putting those Marxist judges in the driver's seat. And then when they saw Republican leadership ignoring what they were doing, they took it correctly as a thumbs up and put it on steroids. So, folks, here's the amazing thing about this. so many things are changing so fast. We want it all fixed right now. It's not going to be, but we can fix it because we have X. It's an incredibly powerful tool. That means these Republican leaders can't get away with aw shucks doing nothing anymore. Insane thing number four, another powerful testament to the power of X and uncensored social media. Right now, New York Times reporters admit on a podcast that this young generation is the most conservative ever recorded by polling. Well, the boys are anyway.
If you look at this chart among white men who were 75 years old, supported Kamala Harris at a significantly higher rate than white men who are 20 years old.
Young people have gone from being the most progressive generation since the baby boomers, and maybe in some ways more so, to becoming potentially the most conservative generation that we've experienced.
That's New York Times columnist Ezra Klein talking to Democrat pollster David Shore about the absolute disaster of a train wreck of a double catastrophe that Democrats are facing with men under 30. It's astonishing to look at this chart. Normally, young people are left-leaning, not surprising, and then the older they get, the more conservative they get, especially for men. Not so. You're looking here at people 25 and under. Folks, they've got somewhere between a 16 and about 25% support rate for Democrats. To contrast that, look at men in their 70s, for instance. They have about a 40% support rate for Democrats. And there's another disaster here they didn't even talk about in that clip. That's men of color. Democrats used to count on getting between 88-92% of the black male vote. They absolutely need that to function. Well, and as far as the Hispanic vote, they need a good 60-65% among men. Well, what are young men of color doing overall? They're not cooperating. Under the age of 30, the support rate for Democrats is between 55-50%. That's not going to work. Yeah, that's still a majority. But let's compare again what with older generations. Again, let's look at, I don't know, men of color. Let's say in their 60s or 70s, their support rate for the Democrat Party is between 72-75%. You can see the scope of the disaster there. And folks, this is what happens when Democrats tell men they suck over and over and over and over. But something else is going on here. I see it in my own house all the time. They're polling on this one. Wait till they get a load of boys who aren't even voting yet, those who are 12 and 13. I have them in my house. All of their friends, black, Hispanic, white, hardcore conservatives. Where's it coming from? Free speech. This is the first generation of boys to grow up in a total free speech environment. Do you know where they get their news from? They get it from memes and short videos, a lot of them off X, a lot of them off TikTok, some of them off TikTok, a lot of them off X. They're funny videos. These aren't hard news videos, but they're dead on with issues. And most of them laugh and mock the Democrats. It's brutal. These boys have grown up not playing in their neighborhoods like we did, but playing online. Together, mostly video games. Those video games come with forums where this stuff is shared. It starts there anyway, and then before they know it, they're watching Joe Rogan or Jordan Peterson. They love Ben Shapiro and Charlie Kirk. These are their heroes. To them, this is where news comes from. You don't get it from a newscast. What is a newscast? Folks, this is one of the most fascinating things I've ever seen, and I'll attach the slide. And the funniest thing is, as it gets younger, as the ages get younger, the support among boys for the Democrat Party declines. Like if you go here to what looks about 15, 16 year olds, it's about 15%. Why? Because they are the first generation. Here's the fascinating part, to grow up with an absolute stark, real view of what the Democrat Party and liberalism is, unfiltered in any way by the media. It's a disaster for the Democrats. Speaking of disasters for the Democrats, insane thing number three is really bad. It's a Pew poll, the liberal Pew polling institution. And this is a bad one, folks. I don't know how the Democrat base comes back from this. It's a poll on Trump's immigration policies. And when people are asked, hey, should we deport illegal aliens who've committed crimes? 97% of Americans are in agreement. Yes. Yes, we should. We should round them up and deport them. In other words, the Democrat leadership now represents a whopping 3% of Americans and overwhelmingly doesn't even represent their own base. What about the Democrat leadership belief that generally illegal immigrants living in America should not be deported? Oh, that's supported by a whopping 16% of Americans. In other words, we're not even to 20. So you know how Trump a couple weeks ago pointed out how Democrats keep putting themselves on the wrong side of 80-20 issues? Well, and folks, credit Donald Trump for this. Understand how far he's taken the Republican Party, because after, Romney's loss, and honestly, after Bush's win, I mean, the Republicans were the ones in the driver's seat trying to do amnesty and arguing we should keep all these illegals. And folks, when Romney lost, the major conclusion that the party came from in this, you know, massive binder full of ideas was that the Republicans really needed to move to the left on immigration. They needed to do amnesty and they needed to just go ahead and capitulate to the Democrats on that. There's just too many Hispanics and they were always going to hate us. And the only option we had was to throw open the border and welcome the rest of their family. Well, Donald Trump, and folks, that was literally in 2012. So Donald Trump is taking this party in a very different direction. I mean, you don't even hear the word amnesty anymore in politics. I mean, Marco Rubio, Lindsey Graham, they used to be huge amnesty fans. They were known as the Gang of Eight. Nobody speaks of that anymore. Donald Trump has done that over time, and it's a miracle. It literally will have demographically saved this country if these trends I've laid out continue. I mean, saved it at the voting booth. Insane thing number two. Stick with me here. Not the kind of thing I normally put in the Insane Things podcast, but I am fascinated with what was just discovered about the Giza pyramids. For centuries, human beings have been fascinated, especially this one, by the pyramids, by the Great Pyramids in Egypt, because nobody can figure out how they moved those massive blocks that the pyramids are built with. Our technology now would struggle to move them. They've filled people with awe and with wonder because of it. Caused historians to wonder if we've perhaps lost the technology we once knew of. And it may be something as simple as a way to use a pulley system that we just don't have anymore. Well, what if I told you that the pyramids, as awesome and awe-inspiring as they are just the top, just the tops, the roofs of a superstructure, a 4,500-year-old superstructure that appears, thanks to ground-penetrating radar called SAR, to go down as far as 1.2 miles into the earth. Underneath one of the pyramids, called Khufu's Pyramid, are previously unknown internal structures that are awe-inspiring. At least that's if this SAR radar report is to be believed. Now, the Egyptian government has, for good reason, for a very long time, refused to let anybody dig under these pyramids. They're afraid of what they'll disturb. It's obviously archaeologically extremely valuable. So instead, two companies and two researchers used a kind of radar operated off satellites passing over the pyramids. The work was supported by credible institutions, including the University of Pisa, this is Italian, and the University of Strathclyde. And the methodology was leveraged from data collected by the well-established satellite constellation operated by the Italian Space Agency and EGEOS, a reputable company in remote sensing. Now, this technology has been used before archaeologically, and immediately people cried foul because it only penetrates the Earth, you know, a few dozen feet, not as far down as they're claiming. But what they did do is utilize a different way of reading the vibrations captured by the radar. And man, what they captured. Cylindrical structures going way down into the earth, ending at a massive base. Wrapped around the structures are what look like coils or maybe staircases. It's hard to say. Now, Immediately, people went wild with this because every conspiracy theorist claimed it proved their conspiracy correct. And some people were even saying it was an ancient city discovered. I've looked at the scan. There's no way you can get ancient city out of that. I mean, it could be, but it's just not definitive enough to know. But what you can see is the base, the sides of which are each as big as a football field, and the columns, which are massive and unbelievable. And folks, as inexplicable, given the technology of the time, as the pyramids themselves. What the heck is that? Anyway, a paper on it was published back in 2022 in a scientific journal, and nobody's been able to crack it until now. It's just that nobody noticed it until a group of Italian scientists who reevaluated the paper made several groundbreaking announcements in a big press conference over the weekend. That's why everyone's talking about it now. It's mind-blowing. What the heck is under there? Finally, insane thing number one, the bullet we dodged. Oh my gosh. The outlines of the totalitarian world regime we almost lived in, would have lived in, had Kamala Harris won, is taking shape before us every day. I feel like falling on my knees and thanking God when you see something like this because of what was just discovered. There's this group called America First Legal. They're in a long-running FOIA lawsuit against the State Department. America First Legal is run by now Trump Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller. There was a two-year court fight for documents related to the FOIA lawsuit against the State Department over the Global Engagement Center, which was run out of the State Department and funded and managed by USAID. Well, they got hundreds, bottom line, got hundreds of documents. Come to find out, there was a massive superstructure, a censorship nerve center that not only had been built for mass censorship across the globe of conservatives, MAGA supporters, populists, nationalists, and just anybody who wants to be free and say true things. Yeah, here's the shocking part. It was being run out of USAID, and it turns out it was a partnership between them, State Department, Pentagon, which is illegal, and the UK government. Yeah. Think about that. We thought we defeated them centuries ago during the revolution, but apparently no. They were censoring our speech. Now, if you're thinking, that sounds familiar, I think I've heard this before on this podcast, you have. But we never had this level of detail. Put it all together with what we do know from recent censorship hearings, and the outlines of this horrific system begins to take shape. First, they fund the fact checkers. Then the Global Engagement Center, they're the ones who go around on behalf of the government and threaten advertisers not to advertise on and near certain sites, Google, Twitter, Facebook, you know the deal. And then the actual censorship apparatus the left was building. It was, in short, the world's first global government built around the need to censor anyone accurately criticizing the left. It was a true government structure, all the parts of which were run out of USAID. The first problem USAID, the Brits, the Pentagon were working on was all those censors had turned into a billion-dollar industry. It took a lot of manpower to find themes, ferret them out, and censor them. They needed an AI program that could lock onto things we said, target freedom-loving individuals, and erase them digitally. USAID was building it through the UN with $190 million of your tax money.
Mr. Schellenberger, you're aware that U.S. taxpayer dollars have been used by the UN to develop and implement an AI-assisted fact-checking tool to label speech as misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation, toxic or hate speech, correct?
Yes, sir. Very disturbing.
In fact, in 2021, the U.S. gave the UN Development Program $190 million in taxpayer dollars, and I verify what they've developed has been tested in five countries: Kenya, Honduras, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Zambia. And it's intended to expand to more countries. Does that concern you?
Extremely.
That's Representative Ben Klein talking to left-wing free speech activists. There's only two of those in this country, him and Matt Taibbi, at a congressional hearing 2 weeks ago, but they're referring to the same program. We just got hundreds of pages on. That's how we knew that the UK government was working on this with the Pentagon. Folks, do you know what this is? When you look at NATO, when you look at those buffoons up there screaming and yelling, war in Russia, Ukraine, blah, blah, they are at war. Understand that. But they, France, the UK, Germany, and the half of the American government that represents the Democrat Party are at war with the rest of us. That's the lines. NATO started out as, hey, we're going to fight the USSR and stop Russian encroachment. Now they've essentially become what they set out to fight, and they're working together to crush us. And man, did they get close. Here's the other side of that monstrous system. Schellenberger here is talking about USAID funding a digital ID program where you'd have to essentially ask their permission, the government's permission, and really it'd be like a non-entity. Say you wanted to complain to your congressman because you can't get online because they won't issue your digital ID because your digital ID stopped working. Well, who would they complain to? I don't know, some bureaucrat buried deep inside USAID. Do you see now why Trump and Musk went for USAID first? Anyway, here's Schellenberger about the digital ID program that is the other side of this monstrous system.
You know, USAID has been pushing digital IDs that would tie people's bank accounts to their social media profiles. I mean, it's out of Black Mirror. I mean, the idea would be that they'd be able to police and potentially debank you for something that you said online. It's extremely disturbing, and I was just kind of shaking my head because after 2 years of this, we just keep discovering more censorship initiatives hidden away in different agencies, the UN, USAID. I mean, it's madness.
It's terrifying. You agree. Programs like E-Verify and the one I-Verify, the one you just mentioned as well, could be weaponized by authoritarian governments to silence dissent. And you've seen
by our government
as well. And yeah. Well, of course, by our government as well. And
that's Schellenberger again at the same censorship hearing about 2 weeks ago when he's talking about I-Verify. He meant to say I-Verify instead of E-Verify. That is that ID system that USAID was building. Folks, they got this close. So the 200 plus pages that we just got is the part where the British government and, of course, the Pentagon, the State Department were all working via USAID to put all of this together. It was a superstructure and it was all but in place. Folks, right here, you're looking at why the Democrats fought so hard to keep USAID intact, but the people in it inside of it so that they could pick up the pieces later and continue. Understand what this means. Know that every time they win from now on, and they'll win again, they will, when they win total control or maybe even just the presidency, our Bill of Rights, basic human freedoms will be in mortal peril every single day that the left serves. For them, when we win, it's just a setback. They sit around, bide their time. They don't lose any of their rights. For us, we'll be lucky to come out of the next Democrat presidency and one after that with any kind of rights intact. These are the stakes. This is how far they got. Thank God we're disassembling it. This is the beginning of 4 years of disassembling it. Hopefully we can crush this federal government, ground it down into paste, into nothing, so that reassembling it cannot be done quickly. It's the only way. When they serve, when they win, we won't lose our freedoms. From here on out, folks, it'll always be a fight for survival, a fight for our most basic freedoms. Folks, we've never faced that before. When they win before, it's always, well, we're going to get a big tax bill. They're going to blow it out the government. We're going to have to put up with liberal things. No, folks, every time they win, we will face totalitarian government. And we need to understand it and be prepared for it. And folks, with the digital angle here that humankind has never seen before, it might be totalitarian government that for the first time, we can't shoot our way out of. We may not be able to get out of when they get it on us, which means from here on out, we're always going to have to fight like hell.
With Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.